or Kwanzaa in ICE detention facilities around the country. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. We've been joined today by Angela Kim, Doug McVeigh, Karen James, and Emma Lugo. Thanks so much for joining us on Prison Pipeline.
And so this is Christmas, for weak and for strong, the rich and the poor one. The world is so young. And so happy Christmas for black.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Ready for another year of grassroots community radio? With your support, it's possible. Go to kbu.fm/give or mail a check to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214 to contribute to KBOO's $75,000 goal for our KBOO Fights Back campaign, going on now until December 31st. What better way to celebrate than by gifting your loved one a KBOO membership this season?
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from Metropolitan Family Services Cache, Oregon, an economic program committed to improving the financial health of low to moderate income families by providing tax preparation services. Volunteers are currently needed to support this program. All training is provided, no tax experience necessary. More info on volunteering at cacheoregon.org.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 0.
Never been done before.
We're talking about a subject.
What are your thoughts on the resolution that was just passed?
You know, I think it's an extension of what I said the very day of this. All this needs to be reviewed and looked at. We welcome a review like that. You know, there's a lot of information out there right now that just clearly isn't accurate. So the only way to really bring that all to light for our public and if they have any confidence in it is to have someone come and do an independent review, and we welcome it.
What information is out there that's not accurate?
I don't want to get into that. Obviously, I don't want to certainly speculate about things, but there's our information, the way things have been characterized, and timelines that just simply are not a reflection of what actually took place. So what we need to do now is we need an independent group to come in, take a look at it, and lay it all out for our public so they can see what really happened.
For the journalists who were attacked, will the officers be held accountable?
Well, that presumes that they were attacked. I don't know that. We're investigating the whole case. But if mistakes were made by our department, we will surely hold people accountable.
Well, I just know the NPR reporter.
You gotta get going, Chief.
The voice that you just heard is from a reporter, activist, and somebody who has feet on the ground, shoulder to the grind, ears to the street, as they like to say. Her name is Georgia Fort. Out of Minneapolis, St. Paul area, and we've been wanting to get somebody from that part of the country on to follow up with the coverage we've been doing about ICE raids and National Guards and the attack against immigrant communities. As you know, this current administration turned its anger and its vitriol towards Minneapolis, St. Paul, and targeted the Somali community, said they don't contribute, that they're crime-ridden, and all sorts of negative stereotypes, which in the minds of some is a justification for them being rounded up, harassed, and targeted by ICE. So, Georgia, in your report, maybe you can give a little bit of additional context. You're talking about reporters that are in the line of fire.
That's right.
And so this takes it to, I guess we should expect this, but I think when you hear and see it happening in real time, it just is beyond bewildering.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we are supposed to be protected under the Constitution. We have a First Amendment right to free press. We have a First Amendment right to protest. And what we've witnessed this entire year all across the country, not just in Minnesota, is that constitutional right being violated over and over and over again without consequence. So much so that it has become normal. And so here on St. Paul's East Side, which is the capital city of Minnesota, there was a raid on November 25th, just days before Thanksgiving. Several hundred people arrived on scene, and three journalists ended up being attacked, one taken away by ambulance who worked for NPR. The local officials, as well as the chief of police, have not taken a stand against this attack on journalists. And I think, you know, we have come to expect our federal government to violate our rights. That's just at this point, it's normal, common day occurrences, right? But when it comes to our local officials, people who come to our churches, people who come to our schools and ask us to vote for them, right? Those are the people that we would expect would be standing up, speaking out, and making sure that these types of violations don't occur. But what we're seeing is that either they are also afraid or they're complicit. And so we will continue to advocate for accountability for those three journalists who are attacked here. And I think the country, quite frankly, should be demanding accountability for the more than 170 U.S. citizens who have been wrongfully arrested by ICE. And that statistic is according to ProPublica. 170 U.S. citizens have been unlawfully detained by ICE.
Wow. Let me ask you this, going back to reporters and journalists being attacked. Do you feel collectively we dropped the ball because it was right there in Minneapolis, St. Paul, that we saw reporters being arrested during the George Floyd, you know, unrest? And I mean, we saw that. I think it was like a CNN reporter was one of them, right? And people were shocked, they were outraged, and then it seemed like it was settled business. But now, you know, places like CNN are catching the ire of this administration to the point that now we probably feel like they're targeted. NPR reporter was one of the people attacked. You know, are these targeted situations, and are you concerned about yourself because you've been speaking out a lot?
Absolutely, I'm concerned about myself. The federal government showed up to my office in June, days before the assassination of Melissa Hortman. Federal agents arrived in plain clothes. They solicited in our lobby area, loitering, waiting around. And what they were waiting for was a person we were interviewing in our office. And they ended up arresting her right outside of our office, less than 5 minutes after we interviewed her. And, you know, she is continuing to fight against the charges that have been brought forth against her. But they arrested her in connection to a protest that she attended during an ICE raid in Minneapolis. And so that type of intimidation against protesters, people speaking out, and we actually had video evidence of her being assaulted by federal agents, being slammed on the ground and choked and picked up and thrown. And this is a woman who is 5'4". And so to see them come to my office, I mean, they could have went to this woman's job. They could have went to her place of worship. They could have went to her home.
And so it felt extremely targeted that they came to my office. And I knew then that none of the local officials were going to stand up to protect the rights of journalists. To me, you know, maybe there wasn't like strong evidence that I was targeted, but my rights were definitely infringed upon. And then days later, to have a political leader, the DFL speaker, be assassinated by somebody dressed up as law enforcement, I just knew that the climate was intensifying. And so your question, you started out by asking, did we drop the ball? Absolutely. Absolutely. Americans in this country dropped the ball because we have tolerated the violation of our constitutional rights, our civil rights, our human rights for decades, honestly. And I think that there has widely been this justification among non-Black-bodied people that there are exceptions, especially when it comes to the violation of Black people's rights, that sometimes that should be justified whenever that person is conducting themselves in a criminal way, or, you know, if they didn't comply quick enough, or, you know, if they're wearing the wrong thing in the wrong neighborhood and jogging at the wrong time of day, right? And so I think that we have been conditioned as a society to justify the deterioration of our rights. And so there's that quote, right? And an injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And that's what that means. It means if you tolerate an injustice to happen in a small little city in Ohio, then don't expect to be, you know, surprised when an injustice happens inside of our White House, you know?
Did we
drop the ball, David? Yes, we dropped the ball when we allowed a person who was convicted of, what, 32 felonies to lead this country? Did we drop the ball? Yes, we dropped the ball when we didn't move with the amount of urgency required to get this guy impeached. We dropped the ball when the Democratic candidate Kamala Harris was running for president and people criticized her without a strategy. And I want to say I agree with a lot of the criticism that she faced in terms of her stance on the genocide, in terms of things she did when she was an attorney. You know, I agree with a lot of those things. However, to make those criticisms and not have a strategy, to me, that's also dropping the ball.
Right. No, I hear you on that. Let me ask you this with respect to the Somali community. And this is a couple of things that I'm seeing in pattern. When National Guards and ICE went to D.C., almost immediately my social media feed was filled with people who I don't follow. But they found, in particular, Black women to come along and say, listen to Black women. We need ICE here because these immigrants are taking over D.C. I mean, it was just feed after feed. And it's like, who are these people? Where are they from? You know, and it would usually start, I'm from the hood. And this is that and the third. Right. And then we heard like nobody knows these people, but yet and still they have been amplified. In Chicago, we had people on the show that live right next to the building that was raided. And they gave a lot of context, including letting us know that the Venezuelan, quote unquote, gang members that they were looking for hadn't been in that building for months. But nevertheless, it was ordinary, you know, folks who've been in Chicago all their lives who were subjected to this type of tyranny. But almost like clockwork, there were people, starting with a sister, whose voice was being amplified, who's like, you know, over here, we need ICE. We need ICE. We got to go. Now, in Chicago, they told me they actually have an entire organization, you know, called Turn Chicago Red or something like that. So they've been dispatched. And so this goes on and on. And then, of course, in Minneapolis, the day after they announced that they were coming, I started seeing videos. You know, the first set of videos with Somali folks saying, we love Trump. And now it's being filled with a bunch of people saying, these ain't our people. Why are we getting behind them? And I'm wondering, what of this is being artificially amplified? Is there tensions in the street? Is there any truth to any of this? You know, when I've been there, I haven't gotten a sense of alienation or unwelcomeness when I've been, among that community. In fact, we have folks that we know, you know, that have always been down and have been movement focused. So what is the story? How's that playing out in the Twin Cities?
Wow, that is a great question and so much to unpack there. The thing that makes this moment a state of emergency is not just the racial terror that ICE is inflicting on communities of color, but also the information war that's happening simultaneously, right? And so some of those videos that you referenced may be real, but how would you know if any of them were AI?
Yeah.
So there's an information war that's happening. And when you follow the money, when you think about Trump's inauguration, he had the leaders of every single major social media platform at the table. And so there has been a manipulation of the algorithm as well in terms of what you're going to see on your feed and what you're not going to see on your feed, including, I'd like to point to, when Charlie Kirk was shot and killed, many yeah. people were able to actually watch that full, situation unfold without there being a disclaimer on the video. Usually, if you were to have footage on a social platform that showed someone dying, there would be a disclaimer that's like, sensitive content, right? Like a content warning. So how come we were allowed to witness a white man who had the political beliefs that he had be shot and killed? And what might that do? What feeling might that incite for people who agree with his ideologies, right? Mm. And so we're not just experiencing a state of emergency because of the racial terror that ICE is inflicting on our nation, but we're in a state of emergency because we are currently experiencing an information war. There's no regulation for AI videos. The platforms that Americans use to predominantly get their information are in bed with the Trump administration. And so there's all these different factors at play. And so I think people have to think critically. I think people have to start to get into the habit of checking three or four different sources before they believe that something they saw on the internet was real. And I think we have to become activated.
Yeah,
our rights are deteriorating before our eyes. And many people are just waking up and going to work and going to school and living their life as if we're going to have an America to pass down to our children in 5 years. You know,
well, I think people are overwhelmed and hoping that this will all go away and that folks like yourself and others will fight the good fight and save the day. But let's come back to, what is happening with the Somali community? Is there a divide? Do they have a conservative element that said, yes, we need Trump, we endorse him, and, and was that just a
made-for-TV
moment?
Here's the thing with the Somali community. You know, I think I heard Trump call them garbage. I think that type of generalization feels very familiar as a Black woman, And so I don't think Somali people are a monolith, just like Black folks ain't a monolith. We got Black Republicans, all skin folk ain't kin folk.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm sure there are some Somali Americans who were all for Trump, but I'm sure many of them now are not. I think we've actually seen a lot of his base, whether they're Somali, whether they're white, whether they're Asian, whether they were Latino. We've seen a lot of his base turn against him for the tactics that they've deployed. What I do know about the Somali community here is they, yes, represent a large portion of our population, and they're also very active. And whether that's in academia, whether that's in the medical field, whether that's in the financial field. And so I think that we should be careful, you know, getting comfortable with these large scale generalizations of a different type of Black bodied people. Right. Because if we as Black folks start to tolerate that, it's only a matter of time before it boomerangs back to us, right?
Yeah.
And so the other piece, I think that Trump, one of his biggest talking points was the fraud, and that there was all of the Somali Americans who participated in all this fraud in Minnesota. But what he failed to mention was that the ringleader was actually a white woman named Amy Bach. And so it's very convenient and it's very familiar the way in which narrative is being weaponized and the omission of certain facts are being made in order to frame an entire population of people in a certain light. The through line that I think a lot of people are not acknowledging when it comes to these masked agents inflicting racial terror on communities of color, the KKK, they wore robes and covered their faces. They were allowed to do that. They were allowed to inflict terror on our communities and hide their face. And so, you know, they say history repeats itself.
Right.
How is it different what we're seeing right now with mass federal agents being allowed to go around and unlawfully arrest U.S. citizens? How is it any different from them sending people to countries that they've never been to, violating people's due process? And if we know, right, you mentioned 2020 and what it looked like then, it was not this bad in 2020, but we tolerated the violation of our rights in 2020. It has now escalated to this. And so, and the reason why I point to the KKK is it started out at one place and it progressively got worse and worse and worse. And that's right. What we're seeing with this administration. And so we can be divisive and look at the nuances of, oh, this group of people did this or didn't do that. This group of people did this and they didn't do that. I think that's actually what they want us to do.
Right. Well, you know, the other thing too, Georgia Fort, is who we're talking to, reporter out of Minneapolis, St. Paul. You mentioned Melissa Hartford and her partner being killed, or with her husband that was also killed, or with his
Yeah.
This happened with people who came in masked up and playing law enforcement, right? So we know that in our communities where people are vulnerable, folks are putting on masks, showing up, saying I'm ICE and human trafficking folks and things like that. And this gets downplayed. And every once in a while, we'll hear about somebody who gets arrested. But this was an assassination that was in your backyard.
Yeah, you know, and, like, and the president never even flew the flag at half staff.
None of that. None of that. And I would be terrified. And I would be very weary about anybody showing up. This is part of the disinformation war that you talked about. You know, are you police? Are you really ICE? Like, exactly who are you? You know, and so that's of concern. And so I guess from what you've seen, how is ICE showing up? Are they marching 10 deep in the streets? Are they just showing up in unmarked vans? Are there any particular incidents outside of the one with the reporter? I think we heard that the young woman who filmed the George Floyd, they said her sister is now caught up, you know, with ICE. So what's been standing out for you as a reporter there?
It varies. There's no consistency in terms of how they're showing up. One thing I have observed, however, is a lot of them drive in vehicles with plates from other states. And so it leads me to believe that they're being flown here and renting vehicles from the airport, that they're not driving their own vehicles. And so I think it goes again back to like the mask, being able to wear a mask, disclosing your identity, driving vehicles that are not in your name. It prevents accountability. It prevents anyone from being able to trace back to exactly who it is that is conducting themselves in our community. And that makes it extremely difficult to hold anybody accountable. When the federal agents were at my office, they did not have badge numbers. We asked for a warrant. They did not disclose it. Those things are also very common practice in the other arrests or raids that I've reported on. And so that itself is also a violation in how federal agents are supposed to conduct themselves. But over the summer, we heard reports from the federal government that they were actually going to activate other departments within the federal government to support in these arrests. And so you're seeing everything from HSI, ERO, SWAT, IRS, ICE. You're seeing a multi-agency effort on this immigration crackdown. And it reminds me, remember the war on drugs? Remember how weaponized that language became and how it ended up being kind of just an umbrella to racially profile specifically Black men in urban communities? I mean, that is essentially what is happening now. We're seeing racial terror inflicted under the guise of immigration. But you can't say that every incident is an immigration incident when we're hearing more and more reports every single day of U.S. citizens being arrested, you know?
Or people who haven't committed any crimes. Because remember, people were told that we're going after gangbangers and, you know, hardened criminals. But then it's like, but you just snatched somebody's grandma up from the school, you know, who actually had the green card and everything, but you changed the rules and then you're retroactively going out. So it's like I say, you know, Georgia Fort, your passport is no longer valid. And then I go, Georgia is a lawbreaker. She doesn't have a valid passport. But you just... You just put the rule in place. So we have a lot of that going on. Minneapolis, St. Paul is also a movement city. So what's been the pushback right now? How's it looking? I've seen videos of demonstrations. I know you've been out there. Have those been effective? And, you know, where do things stand? And also with the governor on this, you know, since he was running for vice president, has he been spoken out on this? Tim Walz.
Yeah, I would say the demonstrations have been as effective as they can be. We saw over this past weekend there were a presence of ICE in a city called Chanahassen, which is a suburb of Minneapolis, where two roofers were at a construction site. And this is frigid, below zero temperatures, the coldest day of the year in Minnesota. These guys are out there working, and there were reports of ICE. And so dozens of people showed up and continued to do what they could to keep the guys warm. One ended up having to go to the hospital. And the other, you know, was able to wait it out. And so I believe that ICE ended up leaving without arresting either one.
Oh, they were roofers, so they wanted to get them to come off the roof. And it was just too cold for them to get up there. Wow.
Yep. And so I believe they were able to wait it out. I think they were out there for about 3 hours. So there have been some instances where the demonstrations are effective. Certainly effective in capturing the wrongful arrest of Susan Tincher, who is a white woman that was out volunteering as an observer. And they ended up arresting her. They cut off her wedding ring. And she actually now is among five others, along with the ACLU Minnesota chapter, that's suing the immigration, the ICE, you know, department. And so, yeah, I mean, I think the demonstrations, the lawsuits, our attorney general has filed probably two or three dozen lawsuits against the Trump administration at this point.
Is so it still Keith Ellison?
Yep, Keith Ellison. And so I think everyone is trying to do what they can, although I think some elected officials are scared because they saw an assassination. And there was a list. Melissa Hortman and her husband were not the only people who were being targeted. There was an entire list of people. And so it has caused people.
Were these Minnesotans?
Yes.
Oh, so, wow.
Yes, elected officials. I think there was only maybe two or three people on there who were not elected officials. And so when it comes to the governor, he issued a statement after Susan Tincher was arrested. And there was another Somali man who was arrested on his lunch break, who was actually a U.S. citizen. And so we saw him issue a statement after those two U.S. citizens were arrested. But other than that, he has not been... He is not shown the same courage in speaking out that we've seen, for example, with like the Chicago mayor. I think he's been an elected official who has been extremely vocal against the ICE arrests. Right. So it seems like the politicians here have been a lot more conservative. Surprisingly, the mayor of Minneapolis has started to speak out a lot. We've also heard the chief of police speak out. But, you know, it's hard when you follow the events that are happening beyond just the news cycle and you have a recollection of what people were doing and saying 6 months ago. You know, sometimes we need a juxtaposition because their stance in June was they kind of just rolled over and they cooperated with the federal government during the first big raid that happened here. And we have yet to see any substantial evidence that the claims the federal government made about that raid were actually true. What they told us was that it was international sex and drug ring that they were busting up. But no one's been arrested. No charges have been brought forth.
Right.
But we saw elected officials here cooperate.
Wow.
And so, now they're speaking out. Now they're saying, you can call us for help. We're here for you. But it's hard to think you can actually trust them when you've seen them cooperate with the federal government.
Georgia Fort, I have a million more questions, but I know time is short. A couple of things. How can we follow your stories? I know we followed you pretty intently in the past, especially during the George Floyd situation. You know, is there anything that you want people to pay attention to in terms of what is going on in your city?
Yeah, if you head over to my website, GeorgiaFort.com, you can find all my social links there. And I do a lot of posting just directly to social media. You can sign up for my newsletter. I push out a lot of my stories and coverage there as well. I think people should be paying attention to a few things. The White House recently published a new webpage on their website called Media Offenders, where they are categorizing outlets and journalists as liars, lunatics, or being biased. There are already 50 different people and outlets on that list, including Jake Tapper, Whoopi Goldberg, you know. And so they are calling out people in the media who are not running with their narratives. And I think this is going to escalate to something dangerous. The political violence we've seen directed at political leaders, I would imagine or anticipate, if we keep moving in this direction, that type of violence is going to begin to be directed at people in the media.
Wow.
And so I think that folks should be paying attention to that. And I think that everybody who feels compelled to just look away should not. I think people really need to keep watching what's happening. And I think people have to start to take some responsibility. This is our country. It's our constitution. And if we want to maintain our freedom and our civil liberties, we have to be willing to take a stand. We have to be willing to do something against what is happening, because right now they're coming for every civil right, human right, constitutional right, and they're testing the ground for how they can break it. And so what side of history will you be on?
Profound questions, sobering questions. Georgia Fort, georgiafort.com. We will be on the lookout. We appreciate you coming on the show. And yeah, the media offenders list, that is some new, I can't use the word I want to use, but it's an expletive, but I'll let people, you know, figure that out. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Hard Knock Radio. We're rocking with Picasso.
What?
And Maya.
Who?
And my last name is Susana. Yeah, yeah.
I need a dollar, dollar, dollar. That's what I need. Hey, hey. Well, I need a dollar, dollar, dollar. That's what I need. Hey, hey. Said I need a dollar, dollar, dollar. That's what I need. And if I share with
Bienvenidos y bienvenidas otra vez. Welcome to PNN Poor People's Revolutionary Radio. This is your co-host Muteado Silencio con voces de migrantes en resistencia. Also with us, mi carnala, a fellow houseless poor poet, Pobre Scala Latini.
I try to stay clean, but you steal my soap and all my clean clothes. I try to stay housed, but you throw me on the street, out my tent, and out my house. I try to stay fed, but you steal my food crumbs instead. You don't want to see us. No matter where we run, the sweeps are a slow genocide. The bulldozers, the tow trucks, that's your gun. Yeah, this is PNN, not CNN, people. That's Poor People's Revolutionary Radio, live and direct right here in this small part of unpimped, unplayed, unsold Mama Earth that us houseless people call homefulness, a homeless people's solution to homelessness. And one of the politricksters in this town is proposing another layer of violent criminalization on our houseless bodies and our brothers and sisters in these cold, freezing streets right now. Even though they're towing and sweeping and killing people every day, they don't want to see us. And these tow trucks and these brooms are their guns.
On this edition of Poor People's Radio, we will be honoring another stolen son, stolen by the angels of the state, police terror, Mario Woods. We will speak with comrade warrior, poet, and revolutionary, Dogtown Dro. Then we will hear the powerful flauta of a beautiful human who has guided Poor Magazine with his prayer, wisdom, and love for many years. A spiritual tío to our homefulness, Poor Magazine familia, and an amazing musician. Then finally, free speech is never free in America.
We know that our black and brown and poor bodies are oftentimes eradicated and erased from these occupied streets every day by these agents of the state, by these politricksters, by these systems that are never meant to support Indigenous and Black and Brown bodies. So we are blessed to be in this space, holding love and lifting up the spirit of Mario Woods, stolen by state terror in occupied Yalamu, aka so-called Frisco. 10 years since the agents of the state took him from his mama, took him from his community. So we are blessed to have warrior comrade Dogtown Dro on the phone, on the line with us. Welcome back to Poor People's Radio, family.
Appreciate the welcome. We here because the push keeps going, and we got to keep these names alive and in circulation. They want us to forget about our brothers and sisters, but as long as we keep their name alive and as long as we keep circulating the call for liberation and justice, we're going to be on their heels, and they're going to have to sweat and lose some sleep.
Can you tell relatives, listeners, and viewers a little bit about Brother Mario?
Mario was a kind soul. He grew up in the Hunters Point Projects. He has family in Houston, Texas. Mario, he was a kind dude. He was an aspiring film producer. He wanted to make documentaries. He made one when he was very young about growing up in Hunters Point, and he showcased his mom. He showcased his friends. Him and his mom showcased the Exxon plants just outside of Hunters Point that have been attributing to the cancer rates in the Black community of Hunters Point. Mario and his mom were covering that when nobody else was. He has been in and out of the system, and anybody that's had that experience can attest that you don't really come out of that with any sort of rehabilitation. And I can attest to that. It's not even just anecdotal. For the most part, you go in, you come out a bit touched, and you don't come out with the same outlook. It's such a trap when you have a brother that has such an affliction because of the police. You send the police at him. You send the triggers at him. You send the triggers at him to provoke a response that oftentimes ends up in the loss of life for us. There was a 911 call where they said, this little dude has a knife. There's no evidence of an attack or a crime, but they found him on 3rd and Fitzgerald by the bus stop here in HP, and they surrounded him, and they shot him with beanbags. Mario is 5'6 on a good day. He allegedly had a pocket knife, like a 3-inch blade maybe. He did not have it lifted. He's surrounded by a bunch of trained soldiers with body armor, handguns, and everything. Wow. He's already been wounded by beanbags, and now they got live ammunition trained on him. As he walked towards the end of the corner in an attempt to get home, and right in front of him was a Black police officer, and that would be the man that fired the first shot. The other four firing, I think it was 25 shots altogether. There was no provocation. They say that he lunged. At the alleged point that he lunged, he's still about 12 feet away from the Black cop that he allegedly lunged at. He's limping already. He's slumped. They filled that kid up with so many bullets. All the barbarism that we've heard about since chattel slavery in our current tense.
Thank you again, brother, for being there at the vigil and just also standing up for the community. One of the things that we know from the past is that relationship that the VBU Hunters Point community have with the pigs. We know what happened with Kenny Harding. We know that this is a lot of outsiders coming into this African-American community. What are the things that we as community members can also activate and do to save our folks from being killed?
I think it's our civic duty. I feel like it's almost common decency. If you were to walk by and see an old woman struggling on the ground to get up, she may have fell and may not have the strength to get up. I think it's almost common decency that you would help that woman up, or at least offer to help that woman up. Now, given the reality of people of color and poor, houseless people are dynamic with the police, it is almost the same theoretical circumstance where you see a person that's in need. It is common courtesy to initiate some sort of advocacy. And that could be as minimal as recording the police so that they are aware that there's community accountability to whatever degree that even matters. But I just really want to stress to people that we're not doing enough in that regard. It should just be normalized. Mm. You see the police messing with. Now, if you see the police pull over some sporty white man in a BMW, don't miss your appointment. Don't miss your lunch. But you know what I'm saying? If you see them accosting and detaining or even questioning or harassing anybody that looks like us particularly, then it is your civic duty to document, if not offer yourself as an advocate. Actually, I want to speak to your point is what we can do. We can learn our rights much better. We can learn our First Amendment, our Fourth Amendment, and our Fifth Amendment particularly. Most of us don't. I had to do some independent research to understand these things. And I say this as a revolutionary that does not adhere to a constitution or an American government and laws and such. However, if we're navigating this battlefield, then we have to utilize what principles are in play that we can use to our advantage to protect ourselves.
To Mario Woods, presente.
Presente.
Thank you, family. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, brother.
Love.
You're listening to Poor People's Radio. That's PNN, not CNN. Lifting up the warrior spirit of Mario Woods, of Jessica Nelson Williams, of Luis Dimitro Góngora Pat, of Stephen Taylor, of so many survivors or victims or ancestors of police terror that are part of this system, that are baked in, that are baked in to the colonial terror. And that's why we resist every day. And it's my pleasure in that vein to bring in another badass warrior who keeps us going with his musica, with his palabra, with his flautas. Jose Cuellar, Dr. Loco, yes. Rockin' Jalapeno Band. Welcome back to Poor People's Radio.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
You've been under the weather.
Yes, lung cancer will put you there. The world is a little bit under the weather, and I'm not feeling too good myself. No, I'm doing as well. I'd like everyone to know I'm doing as well as possible. I'm feeling good. My energy is coming back. I've done my chemo, and we're hoping to make it to the summer and beyond. And I have to say, the power of prayer, folks, it's really, really, really important. The healing energies that are sent, bundled in prayer, bundled in music, bundled in whatever, those prayers, that energy, it reached me and it has helped me immensely.
And if people don't know, if you don't know the powerful music of Jose Cuellar, a.k.a. Dr. Loco, look up his work because it'll keep you dancing.
He has a show coming up too.
The benefit that people need to come to, it's on December 14th at Brava Theater. Need to support our powerful warrior here, and with a little bit of, you know, resources, come on out. It's going to be a beautiful show. December 14th, Brava Theater.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. It's going to be at least 26 musicians that are already committed to being there.
Wow.
Folks that have been part of the Jalapeno Band, different generations. A celebration for me of the musicians themselves. These guys started and they were in their 20s. They were just, you know, youngsters. Now they're in their 60s.
I don't know how much energía you have, but we'd be honored if you wanted to play some of your musical, beautiful flauta to the relatives on here.
On a Jemez flute. It comes from the Jemez Pueblo. Here it goes. gratitude for all of you, such terrific supporters all this time.
Jose Cuellar, Dr. Loco, yes. Rockin' Jalapeno Band, we love you. I'll show up December 14th at the Brava Theater. You're listening to Poor People's Radio. That's PNN, not CNN, folks. I wanted to ask Smoot, what's happening on Sunday?
On Sunday, come and join us at the Howard Zinn Book Fair Festival. The Poor Poets Project is going to be there. Other poets.
Tongo is going to join us. Of course, our beautiful brother Leroy Moore is coming up. He's part of the Poor Poets and also Crip Hop Nation. There's so much inside of the Clanmark book. And folks don't know about it. It's a powerful book that we just put out this year. Clanmarks, Monuments, and Plaques. And really what it's about is unwashing all these settler lies. You know, and it all leads back to what we were talking about with Dogtown Drow as well. You know, do you want to pretend that genocide didn't happen on these streets? Well, if you do that, genocide just happens again. Right. And that's what we're dealing right now with, the slow genocide of our houseless bodies, with our relatives in Palestine and in Sudan and the Congo and Haiti. You can't normalize genocide. And you can't normalize the lies that you've been told about people like Vallejo, you know, the one who had a whole city named after him because he killed enough people, enough native people. Like Christopher Columbus has a whole holiday named after them. Rapists and pedophiles. It's Junipero Serra. It has endless amounts of streets and missions, right, and churches named after them for basically being a rapist and a terrorist. This book uncovers those. So come out on Sunday, December 7th at 12:30 p.m. to the City College of San Francisco, the Mission Campus. Join us and be part of the whole festival. It's going to be beautiful. There's a lot of really powerful work there. Having said that, we have the blessing and power of having our last guest. There is a threat to your so-called free speech. Right now, our warrior brother, Minister King, who is always on the street speaking the truth, faced sort of essentially a threat to his ability to speak and is launching a powerful court case to fight it. And so we're blessed to have one of the lawyers here, Richard Tan. Welcome to Poor People's Radio.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Can you tell listeners and viewers the actual basis of the case?
The case is a First Amendment case. I think the easiest way to talk about the case is to talk about what actually happened, what happened to Minister King and what he was trying to speak about and protest about and how he got retaliated against. One of the things that Minister King had done was, along with All of Us or None, he had called a demonstration for the 50th anniversary of the assassination of George Jackson. And that was a demonstration that was scheduled to be at San Quentin. So a few weeks after the protest, after the surveillance was done on King, he was outside of his office at California Prison Focus over in West Oakland, and an unmarked van pulled up, and officers from the Department of Corrections Fugitive Apprehension Team jumped out from the van. They kidnapped King, and they took him over to the Solano County Jail. And over there, he was charged with violating the statute that we are challenging in the civil rights lawsuit. Eventually, King was actually released. The charges against him were dismissed without the district attorney ever proceeding to a preliminary hearing. Usually, the reason for that is when they realize that there's no substance behind the charges, that they won't be able to prove these charges at trial. So that's why King was released. But the law under which King was charged affects everyone who has been a prisoner in California. The law says that if you ever had a felony conviction and you are on the grounds of a prison, on the grounds adjacent to a prison, and you don't have the permission of the warden, you are committing a felony. And you can be charged and sentenced to time in the state prison for violating the statute. We're using what happened as a basis to challenge 4571 for all prisoners. We're arguing that the statute violates the First Amendment and you can't use it in this way.
Thank you so much, Richard.
Thank you.
And for all that you do, we appreciate you so much.
So that's all for this edition of Poor People's Radio. To get your complete podcast, go to Poor Magazine on SoundCloud or poormagazine.org or wherever you get your podcast from. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, X, Blue Sky, at Poor Magazine or Poor News Network on YouTube. Gratitude to Anthony Fess, Anita Johnson, and David D for the media access. All power to the people.
Well, I don't know if I'm walking on solid.
The rain falls hard. An old man sleeps, no roof, no guard. Under the freeway, lost in cold. Somebody's father left out alone. What mother could picture this sight? Her child forgotten, lost to the night. $1 billion homes lying away, but for him there's no shelter, no place to stay. What happens to us when we fall from grace?
Fall from grace.
When the world turns its back. Why do the evil people never ever die?
Die.
While the good ones suffer and ask the sky,
sky.
Is there no justice for the ones who cry? Will we ever rise? Will we ever thrive?
Sky.
As this old man shivers in the dead of night,
die.
Rich people passing their lives. Full of life, they turn a blind eye, too busy to care. While he's left to freeze in the cold, cold air. Why do the evil people never ever die?
Die.
While the good ones suffer and ask the sky,
sky.
Is there no justice for the ones who cry? Will we ever rise? Will we ever thrive? Why do evil people keep on living? Why so many who are good keep forgiving? One day, someday, things got to change. We can't keep suffering. we can't remain the same.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Don't know what to get your loved ones this season? Check out kboo.fm/merch to snag some KBOO swag to support community media in style. While you're shopping for gifts, you can